everybody, and welcome back to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and for today's episode, we are back on the thorny issue of British and EU borders. We've covered the situation with Great Britain and Northern Ireland border with Ireland many times, and in episode 57, we checked in with journalist Joe Duggan over concerns of the Rock of Gibraltar. But now, the plight of another, almost entirely forgotten until this point, set of British citizens has been caught up in the Brexit wranglings. Just a short 11-hour flight away from Britain, it's the 15,000 inhabitants of the tiny Caribbean islands of Anguilla. And here to tell us all about it is Blondal Clough. Welcome to the show, Blondal.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, thank you for joining us. Blondal, can you just outline your role in regards to what do you do for Anguilla?
I am the representative of the government of Anguilla to the United Kingdom and also to the European Union. I also wear another hat which assists Anguilla greatly, namely that of Chief Executive of the West India Committee, which is a UK charity incorporated by Royal Charter, which is a consulting partner of UNESCO, and we particularly specialise on small island developing states.
I see. So you're there to promote the interests of Anguilla. So my first question, a white paper has just been issued outlining from Anguilla, outlining the fears over Brexit. Can you tell us why?
Well, I think it's important to speak the truth to power. And in this case, the powers in question are the sovereign powers of the United Kingdom and currently that of the EU. Thus far, Anguilla's position doesn't seem to have registered during what is effectively a crucial step change in the relationship between the United Kingdom and the EU, despite a series of joint ministerial councils that commenced last year. So we felt it necessary to produce the white paper to inform both governments and the public at large, both here and in Anguilla.
Okay, and what are the key tenets of that white paper then?
The key tenet basically is it's really about informing people. I mean, if you were to ask the average man in the street, where is Anguilla? First of all, they'd confuse us with Angola. That often happens within government here. So, number one, that we exist. Number two, we have been British since 1650. Indeed, only 50 years ago, we had the audacity to fight Harold Wilson's government in order to remain British. We are British to the core. And most importantly, we have a direct border with metropolitan France in the guise of French Saint Martin. And that border is recognized by both France and the EU as being a border with them.
I see. Now, in the white paper, Victor Banks, who's the chief minister, he provided the message, our ultimate aim is to ensure that Anguilla is put in a position where its reliance upon neighbouring islands and countries is greatly reduced. This, we argue, can be achieved by providing us with extended and upgraded airport and port facilities and a hospital that is capable of comprehensive delivery of care for our people and the many thousands that visit us each year. Obviously, tourism being such a big stream of revenue. So do you feel that Anguilla is still neglected currently?
I think during our 367-year history with Britain, we've been neglected for huge tracts of time. So it's nothing new for us. We're the sort of people who take that on the chin and just get on with it. 50 years ago, we had one telephone box, no running water, no electricity, and we've gone from that to becoming one of the leading destinations in the world, mostly off our own sweat.
Okay. Just on that kind of neglected feeling, in the white paper, it also says that you suffer from one of the most outdated constitutions. So I guess it's time for that to be updated too.
We want to try and ensure that our democratic rights and indeed our human rights are protected, notwithstanding this outdated sort of phenomenon, for want of a better term.
So what are the dangers of a hard Brexit?
Well, as the Chief Minister pointed out, we are extremely dependent on neighbouring islands. We have a population of over 15,000 people and a hospital with only 32 beds in it. We are incapable on the island of comprehensive diagnostics. I think at the moment we don't even have an MRI scanner. More importantly, every night the border with St. Martin closes promptly at 10 p.m. So if you were to collapse and writhe about on the floor in pain, I wouldn't be able to diagnose what is wrong with you. And more importantly, I wouldn't be able to get you to a sophisticated hospital until the morning. So all I could do is to try and ensure that you get through the night and then get you off the island as soon as possible.
And if we do have a hard Brexit and those borders do close, that just becomes a whole lot more difficult.
Well, they close every night at 10. We know how it feels. If that becomes, if that moves forward, or let's say visas are introduced that are expensive and time-consuming to obtain, then we really are in trouble. On top of that, there's another twist to the tale in that 90% of our fuel comes from a Dutch island because our waters are too shallow to take oil tankers in directly. So if you introduce tariffs on top of that oil, we then have a major problem because oil is not only used for the production of electricity in Anguilla but also desalination of drinking water, as we have no surface fresh water at all there.
Yeah, and I noticed this is a point that's underlined in the white paper, as well as just how important joint alignment with the Panama Canal linking the Pacific and the Atlantic.
Yes, I mean, ironically, although we're not foremost in the minds of people, 20% of the world's shipping passes through our waters every year, 20%. So we are the gateway to the Panama Canal and arguably a superhighway in terms of the marine transport.
And in terms of funding, to my understanding, you currently receive several million from the European Development Fund, and I guess with a hard Brexit, that would stop as well.
Oh, that would stop. I believe it's secured, I'm told, until 2020, and I presume that will be part of the UK's divorce bill in settling that for all of the overseas territories that receive those funds. But unlike many others, this is our only source of significant developmental aid, and we appear not to be eligible for support from DFID. So yes, it would end abruptly, and there would go 36% of our developmental budget overnight.
Now, there has been a bit of a media storm has kicked up over the past few days. Have you been surprised by the interest that's been taken?
To be honest with you, no. I was born and bred here, and I have to say, since taking up the role of representative for Anguilla, I have been stunned by its treatment. But also I recognize that the people of the United Kingdom, and indeed people generally, are decent, and that they get the message. They can see that we need to drink water. We should be allowed to turn on the lights, that we should be able to get to a hospital to protect the health of our people.
Yeah, and the way you sort of eloquently put it there, I think there's so many confusions that can be around Brexit, but that's a very simple way of placing it, that actually these are real human needs that that need to be catered for.
No, indeed. That's these are very basic human needs. We're the sort of folk in Anguilla that roll our sleeves up and, as I said earlier, get on with it. But, you know, we do need a bit of help. And, you know, it's been 367 years. I think that we've been at the back of the queue. It's now time to take us into consideration. Because by ignoring us at this particular point in time, you could so easily put at risk the lives of 15,000 people overnight.
Now, there's been some suggestion that the situation with Anguilla and the neighbouring islands, that could be used as a blueprint to resolve future border issues as we move forward with Brexit. How do you see that playing out?
Well, the truth of the matter is that we do have a very, how can I put it, constructive symbiotic relationship with our neighbours. We have done for centuries. If you can imagine in the Caribbean, every year we suffer from hurricane seasons. In fact, we're in the midst of one now. If my island is hit, the others will invariably come to the rescue. We're not waiting for shipments across the Atlantic. We all help each other out. And I think that's the spirit that you will find, that we do find in Ireland as well. It's just a question of timing, whether we come up with a solution for Anguilla first or whether the Irish come up with one that we can benefit from prior to us.
I see. You touched then on the spirit of the people. And I did want to ask you about the identity of the island as a whole, the spirit of the people, how they see themselves, Anguillan, British, or Caribbean, or a mixture of all of those.
We are very British. We're proud to be British. As I said earlier, we even had the audacity to fight Britain to remain British, and that's been the case since 1650. In terms of being Caribbean, yes, indeed, we are also people of the Caribbean. We are an unusual island in that I think, apart from Barbuda, we are the only island where the inhabitants own most of it, where the indigenous population own most of it. And so we are tied to that island. But it is very much a British place in our minds.
Okay, and a great place to go on holiday and visit.
It's a wonderful place, a very safe place. I mean, we do have issues with our youth in terms of their relationships with each other. But apart from that, it's a very safe place. I mean, you could leave your handbag in an unlocked car and find it there completely untouched after an entire lunch. It's a very safe location.
Perhaps a tricky one to answer, but as you mentioned a couple of times, back in 67 and 69, there was two revolutions to remain British. If it was, and briefly, it did become the Republic of Anguilla. If that was back on the table, independence was back on the table again now, do you think the citizens would take it?
I don't believe so. I think the citizens would want to remain British. I mean, we have been tied to England longer than Scotland. I mean, Scotland entered the Union in the 1700s. So, no, I think they'd want to remain British. But what we do want is to move away from this whole sort of position of being dependent, completely dependent on the neighbouring islands and dependent on the United Kingdom. I think you can be British without being dependent, and that is something which I think in the 21st century we should all strive for.
Yeah, and I guess this interview helps a little bit in some way, but then how does such a small group of people, like we said, 15,000, really get their voice heard? Because as we spoke about previously, there are millions affected with Brexit.
Firstly, you've got to bear in mind that we did not have a vote in the referendum, and that's only Gibraltar as an overseas territory being located in Europe had that vote, so our voice was definitely not heard. It's our job now to ensure that during this very brief period in which such crucial negotiations have to be conducted, that our voice is heard. We can't accept that we merely have a nominal border. We cannot take out the recommendation that we do not inform the people of Anguilla about the details of this. It is their right to know what is going on in their lives and how their future and that of their children will pan out by virtue of these negotiations.
Thank you. And in terms of being heard, if people would like to take more of an interest, where should they go for more information?
More information, I would suggest that you go to the website of the West India Committee or the Government of Anguilla London office. And we regularly tweet. We're happy to host people here in our offices. We're directly opposite Westminster Abbey, should anyone wish to hear some other bells, as it were. Our door is always open. At the end of the day, we're straightforward people who have the central object of improving the general welfare of the people of that territory. We also have quite a significant long-standing diaspora here in the United Kingdom. I think we've been here for over 60 years. I myself was born and bred here. So you may bump into an Anguillan here or there. You may be cheering one on in the Olympic squad. You may find that the person nursing you or your lawyer is an Anguillan. We are about.
Yes, that's one one young lady you would certainly know where Anguilla is my youngest daughter, being she's quite a fan of the athletics, and Darnell Hughes, the sprinter, is of course a native of the island.
Indeed, that's correct, yes. And Shara Proctor, triple jumper, and back in the day, people like Keith Connor, who secured gold for Britain during two separate Olympics. So they were out there. I think the thing about Anguillians is that we don't make a big song and dance about being Anguillians. We're just getting on with life, frankly.
That's excellent. And and just finally, what would you like to be the ultimate solution for this situation? Just a bit more support all around and a bit more taking notice of?
I think it's not just a question of taking notice of. I think that you need to listen to what we have to say about our lives, because at the end of the day, spending a few days or a few hours, you know, with a file marked Anguilla is not the same as being an Anguillan and having to go through the day-to-day on an island that has very limited fresh water, that has very limited infrastructure, and yet still keeps its head up high and wants the best for its future. I think in terms of legacies from this entire Brexit process, speaking for our particular overseas territory, I think that we should be looking at what the relationship between Anguilla and the United Kingdom should look like going forward. It certainly needs modernising, I believe. We need to also, I think, look at, rethink the position of departments such as DFID and their priorities, perhaps to encourage them to give more support to members of the British family more readily, particularly during a transition out of such a complicated situation such as Brexit. And ultimately, for us to be able to stand on our own two feet. We're not looking for the billions or hundreds of millions. At the end of the day, very little can go a long way with Anguillians, and to get us over the line where we can actually become far more self-sufficient and ultimately remove this dependency relationship so that we can look at each other as equals.
Blondell, thank you ever so much for joining us today. We will put the website address on the show notes so that people can find out more information. But once again, thank you for being a guest on the Brexit podcast.
Thank you so much, Tim. Thanks for this opportunity. We're very grateful.
That's all for today, folks. The show's been brought to you by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming and Warren Pohl, and the theme music by Kevin MacLeod. For all things Brexit podcasts, go to brexitpodcast.com, and we look forward to welcoming you to a future episode.